Management or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome, everyone. We're back here for another episode of Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner, along with my co-host brother, Mark Pruner. We're both realtors in Greenwich working at Compass. And we try to bring to you each week the best that Greenwich has to offer and what's going on in the world of real estate here. You know, Mark, it's been, you know, an interesting week. The big, I think, word for the month is inventory. We're down again to an all-time low. And, you know, it's going to be take a while. Usually inventory doesn't start to rise until after the Super Bowl, and we got a couple weeks before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but usually it's not underground. I mean, this is just incredibly low inventory. By the way, the all-time low was last week at 132. We're up to 134.
Wow.
Six sales and four new listings. So it was, yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous out there how little inventory we have. And as we said, if anybody's thinking about waiting till the spring market, talk to your realtor or
call us.
Yeah, call us, and we'll tell you the inventory's low.
Yeah. I'll give you guys a quick story. I put my house on the market, didn't plan on doing that because the inventory was so low. I finally got my wife to agree that that was a smart thing to do. Put it on as coming soon last Monday. Started showings on Thursday of last week. Signed a contract on Saturday for that. Had 65 people through the house. 32 of those were from two open houses we had on Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4. 33 realtors with clients came through the house on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, the inventory is so low. You know, we priced it incredibly competitively and ended up selling it over the asking price. So the spring market of the last two springs, I think, is going to continue to percolate into this spring market.
No, and that, you know, and that's exactly right. As Russ said, it was an amazing number of people coming to see the house in basically 4 days. Russ and I manned it for most of the time together.
And we had even with the great Jim Agro there for a while, too.
And even then, we had people that we didn't necessarily get a chance to escort around and show them all the cool things. By the way, Russ's house, and Robin did this amazing job. It's got just an incredible number of really cool features in the house that you might normally see on a $4 to $5 million house. That's what happens when your wife watches HGTV and you go see $5 million house. You go, well, wouldn't it be nice to pull out, have these cabinets that pull out at this angle and then swing into the room, or the pop out drawer microwaves?
Yeah, you know, the thing that was amazing about it is that, you know, those amenities that were there really did sell the house. I give my wife tremendous credit, one, for the work that she did on the renovation of the kitchen family room area about 5 years ago. But the other thing that she did, and she does every single day, is keeps the house in a condition that, you know, you can walk in. I remember when our brother David walked in our house the first time, he took like three steps and looks around at me and goes, do you always keep the house this clean? And I go, that's what Robin does. And, you know, luckily our kids are like that too. So, you know, that really helped tremendously. But, you know, it really just goes to show you that, you know, pricing well in this market, you're going to see activity and you're going to get offers. And the great thing that people don't realize when you put your house on the market, you have control over the house. I mean, people want to give you money for your deed. And, you know, and if you don't want to sell it at the prices that you're hearing, then you don't have to sell it. But it is going to give you a really good indication of what value is in the market right now.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the condo market, which we don't talk about as much. Condos are about a sixth of all of the sales in Greenwich compared to single family homes. But they provide a key component in the life of Greenwich and making Greenwich the cool and diverse place to live that it is. You go to other Gold Coast towns, and you just don't see as many condos. We have not only condos and co-ops. Last year, we had 215 sales, which is slightly above our 10-year average, but it was down 57 units from last year. And the vast majority of that was in the $600,000 to $800,000 range, where we were down 42 units. And that was, much of it was because we just didn't have the inventory like we do with houses. Everywhere, all the way up, our condos generally end around $3 million. I had a client, and we bought a 3.35, and I think that was the fifth most expensive house or condo in town. But it's a great place for downsizers who want to stay in the area. It's a great place for singles and weekenders who want to get in here. It's a great place for young couples, dinks, as they're known in the trade, dual income, no kids. And the other thing is we're seeing, and particularly in places like Lyons Farm, we're seeing more families with children move in.
Yeah, you know, it has become a true alternative to single-family living in the fact that a lot of people are used to it. They've been in apartments, co-ops, or condos in other areas. You know, it's, you know, you do pay a maintenance fee and a HOA fee.
Well, you don't have to mow the grass.
Yeah, but, you know, you get
which
everything.
Which Russ hasn't done for years, by the
way. Yeah, you basically get a lot of things taken care of. And before somebody thinks also, because I sold my house in Greenwich, I'm still in the real estate business. I'm still going to work hard. We actually are going to move over to where my daughter lives, and she's about ready to have a baby, so we're going to be a little bit more part of my daughter's life and, you know, really try and help out or help her raise a child without an owner's manual.
Well, Robin did a pretty good job. I think she's going to be a great doting grandmother, as will be, you be on the grandfather's side. Speaking of that, my mother-in-law just celebrated her 101st birthday yesterday. Mm-hmm. And my wife had this great idea of putting 101 candles on the cake. Luckily, she got those little skinny candles that are just a little thicker than a thread. But we had four people putting candles on the cake. And by the way, got it from Black Forest. Great place to get.
Unbelievable.
Great place
to get
cakes.
Yeah.
It was their strawberry shortcake cake. So anyway, there I am. We've got 100 candles of these little ones and then one big one in the middle that are all lit up. I pick it up on the tray, and as I'm walking, the flames from 100 candles are being, by the air motion, are being pushed back to me. So I'm holding the cake out as far as I can in front of me. We finally get it. We finally get it set down. And Swan, to her credit, at 101, blew out 101 candles in only three breaths. Now we go back in to cut the cake. And all those flames shooting backwards at me also melted the candle. And so it was a beautiful cake that said, "Happy Birthday, Swan," now has puddles of red candle wax on top of it. And there's no more "Happy Birthday, Swan." But it still turned out to be an excellent cake.
Yeah, no, very much "Happy Birthday to Swan." She's, for those who might remember, she for years was on the Planning and Zoning Commission and on other charitable and committees here in town. And you know, she's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, no, it's been great. It's the same house that my wife grew up in. I told her all she's accomplished is she's moved across the hall to the bigger bedroom with the ensuite bath. But yeah, backcountry's been a great place to great place to live.
I'll tell you one funny story about her. When I first got into real estate back in the mid '80s, I went to planning and zoning meetings. And at the time, Old Greenwich Gables down in Old Greenwich was being zoned and all of that, which used to be the Electrolux vacuum cleaner factory. And so I was there sometimes till 2-3 in the morning because they would wait and put them on at the very end of the agenda. And I remember my wife, we were up at Swan's at an event, family event with you, Mark. And Robin looked at me and goes, looks at Swan and goes, I just want to know one thing. Is my husband really going to those zoning meetings till 2, 3 in the morning? I think she thought I had somebody on the side or something that I was going to see. And Swan said, Robin, I can assure you that, you know, he's the only one in the room when we're talking about all this. So, yeah, he is at the meeting. So I said, thank you, Swan, very much, which was great. But let's go back to condos for a minute. You know, Mark, what is there any one thing about that came up last year that was sort of stands out that's interesting? Is there any one area of town that might have done better than another?
That's the interesting thing is condos. Not only are they in a smaller price range, basically from about $400,000 to about $1.8-2 million, but they're also all within a half a mile of the Post Road, except for a few that are up in Glenville. So geographically, they're much more concentrated, and that's because the smaller zones are there and the multifamily and the business zones where you can build condos. Some people have tried some 8-30Gs, but even they have done it because that's where the sewer lines are. And it's very difficult to build any sort of multifamily without having town sewers.
Talk about 8-30G for a second. Explain to the listeners what that is.
Okay, so and this actually started back in New Jersey in 1956, as I learned in law school. Many years ago, the state has decided that each town should have 10% affordable housing, and that and if they don't have that, then developers can come in and basically ignore all the zoning requirements, the setbacks, the height. The only limitations are health and safety. So if you don't, if you're not hooked up to a town sewer and you can't put in a huge septic system to serve the unit, that's a health issue. If, as was proposed over next to the old Greenwich Tennis Academy on Sound Beach, right next to the train station, the buildings are so high that it's difficult for the fire trucks to get to the upper floors. That's a safety issue, and also the traffic coming in and out of there on what is a blind hill for anybody who's tried to get out of Old Greenwich Tennis Academy at 4 o'clock on a Thursday. Yeah. But those are the limits. And so what developers have done is they've bought up tracts of land. And the proposal is where you might have two single-family homes next to each other on three-quarters of an acre, the proposal is to put in 40 or 50 units. Now, unless there's a health or safety issue, let's say it's 100 units, 30% of those have to be affordable, 15% at 80% of the state limit, and 15% at 60%. The problem is Connecticut, outside of Fairfield County, is much more like Maine than it is like Massachusetts. So our state limits for a one-bedroom are about $1,000 a month. So it makes for very low amounts, which means that the other units have to sell for a good price. So we end up with a lot more $2 million, which also increases the denominator. So when you add 30%, you're actually only adding about 19% more, and we're at 5.4%. So we got a long way to make up the amount of affordable housing that the state is mandating. The statute is very controversial. There have been proposals to both broaden it and also tighten it up even more. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next year, and particularly in this year's legislature.
We're going to take a short break here on Greenwich Streets, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Balance of Nature is fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm in the medical field, and I think when you start out these things, you know, everything from the advertisement sounds so good that you're psyched up for it to work. It's working. Anyway, I'm happy.
Balance of Nature has made a big difference. It's just one of the greatest products, and it's just so simple, and it works.
Balance of Nature is a fantastic product. You could tell it's real. You could taste it. And it gives you really good energy. And it's just right up there with rent, electric cable, like things that you have to have. I'm not cutting Balance of Nature. No, I love it.
Start your journey to better health with Balance of Nature right now. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com for more information or to place your order. Shipping is always free. And don't forget to get 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Laura.
We're back here on Granite Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is Mark Pruner, my brother. We work in real estate here in Greenwich at Compass and been lifelong residents of Greenwich. You know, Mark, I look back at, you know, I remember the day, March 27th, 1967, when we drove over the hill down Lockwood Avenue in weather almost like this. And I don't know why I remember it, to the little house in the corner of Tomac and Lockwood, and
that's a pretty good memory. You were 10 years old when that happened.
Yeah, now I don't know why I remember it that well, but I will tell you, the woman who bought that house has done an unbelievable job with a little Dutch colonial that we grew up in.
Yeah, it's so funny because they expanded the master bedroom, added a very nice master bath off the back of the house. But Russ and my bedrooms are still basically the same. They've been refinished, but it's so weird to just walk into your old bedroom, 40, 50 years later and see it. There was the famous Admit recording where my youngest brother and I tried to, get Russ to admit that he actually cut his hair in between because we were going to the barber twice as often as he was.
Okay, we'll tell even a better story. We wanted to light the fireplace in the living room one time. And so Mark, being the pyrotechnic guy that he is, basically said, "Hey,
major.
I got a great idea," you know, and we had already stuffed paper in there and tried to make it work.
It was wet wood. It
so
wasn't
he got,
starting.
He got about a third a cup of gasoline in a Dixie cup. And basically, there were two love seats on either side, and my brother and I got behind. Mark threw the gas into the fireplace, basically exploded in the fireplace. He turns around and singed off the front part of his hair and his eyebrows. So we learned that gas wasn't a good thing to use when you're starting a fireplace.
Live and learn. Put the gas on first.
So since then, we've always had natural gas starters, which makes it a heck of a lot safer to try and start a fire. But, you know, Mark, let's go back for a second. We were talking about condominiums and all of that. You know, I think there's roughly 3,000 condominiums roughly in Greenwich.
You know, I think that's about right. The other thing you have to realize is probably of the 215 sales we had last year that were condominiums, 29 of them were co-ops. And for people from New York, that's a very familiar form of ownership. But the way it works is there's a corporation that issues stock. And then when you buy the unit, what you're actually buying is stock in the corporation, which comes with a proprietary lease to your unit. The reason that can make life a little difficult for us as realtors is there's only one field card for the entire unit. So we don't know. Usually we use the tax assessor's square footage as the official square footage, and we don't know what that is. Also, co-op financing 5 years ago was really tough. There were essentially only two banks that would do it. Now there are about half a dozen. And if you're looking at a co-op, which we're right across or very close here to Putnam Hill and Putnam Green, they're both condos. Indian Harbor House down on Steamboat Road, along with another unit down there, and then 20th Church Street, Town and Country are basically
all.
Yeah,
no, Town and Country is still condominiums. Yeah. We don't have many, but you know, it is something that you know we still stay on top of, and you know, they can be a great way to live, really, from a standpoint. Putnam Hill, being the backside of Putnam Park and Putnam Hill, is sort of high-rise buildings that have common hallways, where Putnam Park is more of a townhouse style.
Yeah, and as I had mentioned about condominiums before, Putnam Park has a lot of people who start out there. I actually sold a co-op there for $240,000. It was a studio, but it's one of the few places where you can get in that inexpensively. And then Putnam Hill, because it's essentially one floor living with the elevators there, is very popular with downsizers.
And they've done a really good job. I mean, the buildings at Putnam Hill, as well as some of the units at Putnam Park, have been totally redone, and some of them are really amazing. Well done for, you know, somebody who's looking to trade down and live in something that's, you know, a little bit smaller.
Right. And, you know, and that's one thing you have to realize with condominiums and with co-ops is they're individually owned. So the exterior, the lobbies and the landscaping, and we're here with our top landscaper we'll talk with for in just a little bit, those are all common, but each unit can vary drastically. Some of them haven't been updated since they were built, and others were just fixed up the year before. So, by the way, if you are thinking about buying a unit and doing a gut renovation, you want to check and see what the rules are. Some people only allow like 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. So it can take a little bit longer.
Yeah, let's talk for a moment about, you know, buying a condominium town. It does have one unique asset to it, and the fact that, you know, when you're buying it, if it's over, I believe, 10 units by state law or mandate, you've got to offer a resale certificate. What normally would be in a resale certificate if when somebody's buying a condo?
Yeah, so, and what happens is because the state has this requirement for a resale certificate, every condominium purchase is a contingent deal because the buyer has a 5 business day rescission period.
Correct.
Yeah. To decide that they don't want the unit. So in the resale certificate, you'll get the bylaws, you'll get the declarations and restrictions, you'll get an accounting a report with the income expenses and the amount of money that the association has in reserve on their financial statement. And that becomes a big deal, particularly if people tell you that everything's going to be fixed up here in the next 2 years, we have plans to do it, and you look at their bank statement, they only have $50,000 in liquid assets. So that means that you're likely to see an assessment coming up.
Yeah, and it's very important that you get a copy of that and be able to look at it. It's not only in necessary condominium developments or co-ops. It also can happen in a homeowners association like Hillcrest Park or others around, you know, that would have common land that the association would have to maintain. And that really gives you an idea. And one of the biggest keys is, are there any assessments that might be coming up that you need to know about as a buyer, you know, and make sure that the funds in that the association has are there to be able to pay for it.
Right, yeah, because occasionally there are people there who only want the people who are moving in to pay for it and the people who stay. The other thing that's a surprisingly big issue and really makes a lot of difference in sales are pets. There are a lot of folks that have dogs, particularly people with smaller dogs, that want to downsize into these units. And some of them will let pets in, and some of them won't, and some of them have particular restrictions as to breed. So if you've got a beloved pet and you're thinking about downsizing, you want to make sure as to whether or not you can actually move into that place with that particular dog or cat.
Yeah, we have a special guest today that we're going to talk to in just a moment, Dan Agro of Agro Tree. Talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on out there. And, you know, a lot of the work is done, not just during when trees are out, but this time of year. So we're going to take a short break here on Greenwich Streets, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Rand Insurance has been part of the Greenwich community since 1938, and we're located next to the J House in Riverside. We've been helping successful individuals, families, and local businesses with their insurance needs for over 80 years. Contact the Rand experts for insurance for your home, cars, and business, as well as cyber insurance and coverage for your jewelry, wine collection, and vintage cars. Get in touch with us at 203-637-1006 or at randinsurance.com. Experience the Rand difference.
Hi, I'm Tony Savino. Join me Thursday mornings at 9 o'clock for Spotlight on Medicine. Each week I speak with the doctors, nurses, and medical experts at Greenwich Hospital. This week on Spotlight, is total joint replacement right for you? My guests are Dr. Brian Cavanaugh and Greenwich Hospital Total Joint Replacement Coordinator Lauren Bajarski. That's Spotlight on Medicine Thursday mornings at 9 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Hi, we're back here on Greenwich Streets. I'm Mark Pruner. I'm an agent with Compass. I have been abandoned by my fellow agent, Russ Pruner, who is off getting ready to put a large house on later this week. But luckily, we're here with our other great agent, Tim Agro, who was able to, after much cajoling and convincing, bring Dan Agro on. Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and growing up in town and what it's been like. Oh, by the way, Dan and Russ were in the same class at Greenwich High.
Yes, we were. We were on the Key Club together, as a matter of fact. I moved here very young. I think I was 4 when we moved here. And as far as I know, this is the only town I've ever grown, lived in. And, the town has changed a lot, but it's also remained the same a lot. A couple of interesting facts, Connecticut was clear cut in the 1880s, in 1830 to 1880, and then started to go back as farms were deserted through that period of time until now. So I think the trees we have in the town are relatively young. We don't have big old growth forests. And yeah.
You can see that if you go up Lake Avenue, right over the Merritt, there's that new town park. And right now, with the leaves off, you can see, 150 yards into the park, and there are only a few trees that are more than 2 feet in diameter, I guess that was farmed well into the 19th, maybe early 20th century.
Pretty much all of New England, and the great estates in town had established trees because they kept them. And also Greenwich Avenue at one time was lined with elm trees.
I remember that.
If you remember, I'm a little older than you guys maybe, and it was also two ways. And they say you can always tell old Greenwich resident because we look both ways before we cross Greenwich Avenue. And, these are just interesting facts about our area. So it's very rare when you have trees over 150 years old or 200. And we like to, we have a certain affinity for older, bigger trees because we like to preserve that look. You just don't get it much.
Yeah.
But we're also concerned with smaller trees and planting of trees.
Yeah.
And
how did you get into the tree business?
Oh, that's an old, interesting story. There was a hurricane my father bought some land in Greenwich and was going to build a house. And, he gave me a chainsaw and a climbing belt for Christmas. And he said, the good news is we're going to build a house. The bad news is you're going to clear the land. And I had, I had no prior knowledge how to do that. And he just sort of learned on the fly, which was hair-raising at times.
Yes.
And then a hurricane came along, and my friend and I got his pickup truck, and we started going around and clearing up trees. And we said, Dave, this is a nice way to make some extra money.
Right.
And it just morphed from there. And
what year was
grew.
This, roughly?
Oh, golly, probably 70,
yeah.
69. So I'm aging myself.
Yeah, I remember that that hurricane. I was just finishing up what at that time was junior high. Now they call it middle school.
Yes, same.
And, that was a devastating storm. Like a couple of the others, we do seem to be having more of these. Is that something that you're seeing? Because certainly there have been a bunch of trees down over the years.
I don't know. What was the last big storm? Was
Ida was probably Ida was the one with the big rain.
Right.
And then we had Isaac, and then the one with the funny name that really knocked some trees down. Like there have been twice, both in the March storm a long time ago, and then in Sandy, where we were without power in backcountry for 8 days.
Yeah, Sandy was probably the last one where we lost significant amount of trees. But even then, I think our town does better than most areas because we, you know, take care of our trees and we weed out dangerous, bad trees that have, you know, some basal rot and cavities. And we're keeping an eye on it. And people are very conscientious about their trees.
Our land is an old apple orchard. And we probably, when I moved up there, when I got married to my wife about 30 years ago, there were probably 60 apple trees on the property. We're now down to about a dozen because they only last about 100 years, and they were planted in around 1904 or so.
Well, I think we value our trees in this town, and I think taking care of them is you're a steward more than you are of anything because, you know, we're not going to always own your house. As you know, people turn over houses. And when you buy a house that has older established trees, which many people do, I just looked at a job with maybe 20 really large trees in the yard. It comes along with a responsibility to care for them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that really is important. We on our property, we spent a fair amount of money doing just that. We had one tree that fell in Sandy, and it was leaning up against the other tree. And that actually, it would have been simpler to cut down both trees, but we wanted to save that other one. So we spent some time and work. By the way, if anybody would like to call in, and asked Danny about their trees or what's going on. You can call us at 203-661-5051 and get the latest Scooby on what's going on with trees. What sort of jobs do you do in your business? You had mentioned the large land with large old growth trees.
But we do everything. We do a little bit of commercial. A lot of it is making sure trees are safe and that they don't impact the house, mm-hmm. the roof, the gutters. Sometimes people want more sun.
Mm-hmm.
We try to weed out the dangerous bad trees, and we try to, really keep the really good trees. And sometimes people want to take down trees that we don't really feel comfortable taking down, a beautiful tree that's healthy.
Right.
And, you have to be diplomatic because it is their tree and it is their property. And in Greenwich, we still have no restriction on tree removals. We don't have to get permission from the town and like other municipalities do in Rye. They have to get written permission. Yeah. So we have to sort of be that arbiter to what tree is dangerous and which tree is healthy and safe. I mean, every tree has an intrinsic danger to it because – a big storm can knock down the healthiest tree.
Yeah. So, by the way, if you're new to Greenwich and you're thinking, wow, I want a lot of sunlight and stuff like that, I'm going to cut down all these trees. There, as Dan said, there are no regulations on that. However, there is a lot of social opprobrium, and you can get a lot of grief from your neighbors. There was a fellow here about 15 years ago, I think, who clear cut his lot on Clapboard Ridge. And he thought he was moving into a nice community until he destroyed the lot.
Well, he also took them down in wetlands.
Right.
And that was the real sticky wicket for him.
Yeah.
Because I think he had that theory, don't ask permission, ask for forgiveness after. And that doesn't work with the town because they're very, very strict about their wetlands.
Yeah. So, in fact, let's talk a little bit about that.
What does that look like? If someone has wetlands on their property or potentially thinks they might have wetlands on their property but wants to do a removal or pruning or anything like that?
That's a good question because to navigate wetlands, in my opinion, and this is the advice I give my customers, is I always err on the side of caution. Because if I go to wetlands and I say we have a project here and we were looking for approval to do X, Y, and Z, and we're not sure if it's right. in the purview of the wetlands, and an agent comes out from wetlands and looks at it, we get the proper information advanced. We don't open ourselves to lawsuits or to fines or to, you know, you have to go in front of the committee sometimes, and it's kind of nerve-wracking yeah. to be up there and defending what you've done. And to avoid that, you bring in the agent, and they'll tell you exactly. And I also find that with neighbors and wetlands, it's the same thing. If you go to your neighbor and you say, these branches are over my property and they're, you know, I'm worried about them, I want to get them taken away. Most neighbors are very easy yeah. about that. They'll say, well, yeah, by all means, take them off. Go right ahead.
Right.
But if you take those same branches off without asking the right. neighbor, now they become angry at you.
Yeah. So now, as I understand in Connecticut, the rule is that if somebody's tree on their property overhangs your property, you can cut off everything up to the property line?
You can. But
that makes for a real ugly tree.
It can. But you also need to bring your neighbor into it. You have yeah. to live with these people. And it's, mm. you know, people get touchy when you start touching their trees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So this might be like a one-off situation, but if there's a very dangerous tree in the wetlands, is that another thing the town will review and decide whether or not you can take it out because it might fall on your house or it might fall on your dogs or your kids? Or
yeah, they do. And once again, if you bring them in, they're very reasonable. Mm. But as soon as you break the rules,
right.
they lose their yeah. soft and fuzzy edge.
And by the way, a lot of people think of wetlands as ponds and streams and swamps. Wetlands are defined by soil type. So there can be areas that are wetlands that no water has accumulated on in decades. But that's still wetlands. And then also talk about the review area for the wetlands. Because it's not just in the wetlands that wetlands has authority over.
There's a setback of, I think it's 100 feet.
Yeah, it's a 100-foot review area now.
And
they used to have very clear 35 and 50 and 50-foot standards. That's not so clear anymore.
We did a job and we called in wetlands. We had them mark everything out in Riverside by the railroad station there in that little cul-de-sac road. And we thought we were doing everything properly. But they had actual little islands of wetland, like a marker
oh, yeah.
that just maybe 10, 12 feet circles in the middle of no wetlands.
Right.
So it was a little confusing. So we were doing 100-foot setback from the main wetlands, and but they said, you also need 100-foot setback from here.
Right.
It ended up being straightened out, but we had to go to the review board, and we had to make our case. And, you know, it's like the courts. Yeah. Ignorance is no defense.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And you can. There are certainly people who are happy to come and cut your trees down and put you at some significant liability. We had a neighbor who moved in and decided they wanted a bigger backyard. And this wasn't trees, but they actually built a 20-foot wall out into the wetlands. Which they ended up having to remove, which was a good thing because, once again, these fly-by-night people had built the wall so poorly that when they had heavy rains, you could see dirt coming out from between the stones. So that 20-foot-high wall wasn't going to be there for more than 3 or 4 more years. But the wetlands, we made them remove the whole thing.
You make a good point, Mark, and I'd like to stress this to everyone out there. I'm a licensed arborist in the state of Connecticut, and there's a certain amount of education that goes into that and testing. And I'm also insured for arboriculture, which is different than, say, landscaping insurance.
Right.
And you can get people that will do tree work, significant dangerous tree work, under the license of a landscaper. And I would, you know, stress that everyone should ask for a license, arborist license, and ask for a certificate of insurance, and then check the certificate and make sure it's proper. Mm. Just because you come up with an insurance card or say you have insurance doesn't necessarily mean you do.
Okay.
And I think everybody, to protect themselves, should do that.
So let's talk. In fact, talking about protecting yourself, let's talk about some of the issues that we've certainly seen over the years, where you do have a tree that may not be in great shape, and it's got a huge limb leaning out over a roof. What sort of things can you do, A, if they want to keep the limb, and then what sort of work do you actually have to do when you're taking down limbs over or immediately adjacent to a house or a structure?
That's a good question. That's where experience comes in. And I've been trained, you know, I'm 66 now, soon to be 67, and I've been doing this since I was probably seriously as an arborist, probably been doing it since I was 25. And there's ways to lower limbs that very carefully with a climber. If we can get our bucket truck to them, sometimes we just piecemeal them and hold the pieces that are very small, move the bucket and then release them on the ground. And then in really drastic cases where there's big, huge trees over the houses, we'll use a crane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you need to be certified for a crane as well. And that's the safest, easiest way to do it. It's also a little more expensive. But, you know, when you're dealing with what could potentially be a roof repair, which could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, or, you know, break the main joist when a tree's fallen. I mean, I've seen
– actually, after Hurricane Sandy, there was a house up near Burning Tree that they put on the market for sale, and they wouldn't let you see the master bedroom because a limb that was probably a good 2.5 feet in diameter had broken off this tree and literally gone down through the master bedroom roof and was sticking in the middle of the mattress. I mean, it was so heavy, it speared through the mattress, and I was only stopped by the floor below. Eventually that house sold, but it was not a, it was certainly a detriment to selling it.
During Sandy, we had a tree fall in a house in Kaskab, and it had the same situation where a big limb broke halfway, but it still had that long base piece, and that speared through the house, and it was in the master bedroom, and the homeowner was an older woman, and, she was frantic about her wedding pictures. She had her wedding album. Her husband had been predeceased her.
Mm.
And she was in tears. And I crawled up into the house, probably not the wisest decision, and crawled into her bedroom with all the debris around. And I found the album and I brought it out for her. And she was just so relieved. The look on her face was worth the risk. Yeah. But
yeah. So one of the other things that we have an old maple, and it's actually cabled.
Yep.
When do you cable stuff as opposed to just cutting the limb, and how does that actually work?
Well, cabling is a good solution for a limb that's relatively sound. You know, it has a lot of weight and it's hanging over the house, and the people do not want to remove the limb, and we can put a cable up, and that is a support cable, and it doesn't actually keep the limb necessarily from breaking. They can still break, but what it does is it doesn't allow if you could see me, I would show you my hands are spreading up back and forth. When the wind blows, it has a tendency to move the limbs away from the tree, and a cable will keep that from happening. It'll be short movements opposed to those big.
Yeah. And so one branch is supporting the other both ways?
Well, usually you support the main trunk to the branches. Yeah. You don't want to support two small branches. So you have that large, solid main trunk that you can support the branch to. And we do quite a bit of cabling.
Is that like a short-term fix, or would that potentially last?
They can last indefinitely.
I've got one. The tree's actually grown around the cable.
Yeah, we've had to go back and replace cables, you know, that someone else did, I mean, 30 years ago. Last the life of the tree.
Let's talk about disease and pestilence, because I know aspens have had problems, and we've had hemlocks with woolly adalgids. So what sort of things out there are in the way of treatments, and what species really do seem to be problematic at the moment?
Well, just a quick overview. You mentioned the woolly adalgid on the hemlocks, eastern hemlocks, and they've now have soaps and non-chemical and oils that they use, and are very, very effective. And they also feed them. What we found was the chemicals would kill the spider mites as well as the woolly adelgid, which is, you know, like a bycatch in fishing.
Right.
You don't want to kill the spider mites because they serve a purpose and they don't hurt the tree. Right now, there's two things that are really attacking our trees, and that's the emerald ash borer, which this came from Asia. It's a big, large insect, and it's got a green head, and you can see them in there. And you see a lot of the ash trees are dying. And then I just was at the winter meeting for arboriculture in, I think it was in Shelton. And they had a long, long talk, about an hour-long talk on the beech trees. And there's there's a nematode that is attacking the beech trees. A nematode is, better lack of a word, is a small worm-like, but it's microscopic. Right. And historically, they've stayed in the soil. But now this nematode, and they're not sure where it came from, they think it's Japan perhaps, mm-hmm. Is attacking the buds of the beech, the American beech trees. And they overwinter in the buds, and then the spring they do their damage already, and they come out and the leaves are malformed. And you can see the canopy is getting reduced by 50% and 75%. So they said they have some treatments that they're working on. The scientists are really busy at this.
Yeah. Anything, and I guess it was the ashes, not the aspens. We had those in Montana.
Yeah, yeah.
But so is there anything that can be done with the ashes?
Well,
I know there's a lot of cutting of, and the town just cut down three of them in my neighborhood.
Yeah. They're spraying them. They have to find them early. They're doing most of the insecticides now are either root drenching, where mm-hmm. they keep it in the soil, or they're injecting it into the trunk.
Yeah.
And they're having some success with it, but you have to know early that they're there.
So I'm just listening to all these things. It sounds like, you know, there's a lot of different aspects that go into this business. And I'm just thinking there's a lot of people listening that may have come from the city or other cities and never really had to think or deal about this and may not even really have realized that any of these things could be issues. Is there a best practice for new homeowners? Should they have a quarterly consultation? Is there anything that they should be doing to stay on top of this and keeping their properties, their homes, and people that may be visiting them safe?
Well, I've had new homeowners, when they come in, ask us to come and evaluate their trees. We do that. We do that free of charge. Maybe not the wisest business practice, but we still do that. And I must say, I don't advertise. I've never advertised for my business. I've worked for probably 40 years, and we all use word of mouth.
Right.
And to me, that's the best advertising.
Very good word of mouth.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have a good reputation and you're an honest businessman and you do a good job, the word will spread. And, you know, there's nothing like a best friend telling his best friend, hey, this guy came and he did a great job. I'm really happy with him.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's not if somebody calls a name they see in a newspaper, it just doesn't have the same impact.
Yeah. So let's say a homeowner has a tree that may not, they're a little concerned about it, and you come out and find that's an issue. Kind of what is the timing and the sequence that you all do with both the review process, any applications that are needed, the actual cutting? I've always wondered, where do all those wood chips go?
Well, right now we bring them sometimes to nurseries if we can, but sometimes they don't take it. The majority of the time they don't take it. But most of the times it goes to a place in Stanford. It's called Advantage Carting, and they're just a transfer station.
Uh-huh.
And they bring them upstate, and then they bring them to the big tub grinders and mulch. They make mulch out of them.
Will the town take them at?
No.
Okay.
They will take them.
Okay.
But they charge an exorbitant amount.
Is that those steaming piles of stuff that
yes,
we see sometimes
yes.
in the winter when you go into the transfer station?
Yep. So get back to Timmy's question just a little bit more. When we do an evaluation, if we see, as you know, many of these homes that are sold in Greenwich have been held for years and years and years. And the sad case of them, a lot of times, is it's an elderly person who has lived here their whole life. And money isn't,
it's tight,
flowing. Yeah. It's tight. And the trees are sometimes the last thing to be cared for, unfortunately. So we do have a lot of properties we need to go in. And with the renovations, the new kitchens you guys have done,
right.
we have to renovate their yard. I mean, because most people that are buying are younger and they want a tidy yard,
right.
you know, sometimes too manicured, in my opinion,
right.
but that's just me. And so we'll go in and we'll do an evaluation and we work from the house out.
Yeah.
Everything, first the dangerous stuff around the house, the structure itself, and then we move out because there's less, I would say, urgency.
Mm-hmm.
with the stuff away from the house. So we can deal with that first, because as you buy a house, you Mark, I may be wrong, but you incur a lot of costs sometimes in renovations and stuff.
Oh, yeah, no.
Built into the price of the house.
Sure,
almost.
No. In fact, one of the things we always talk about to clients with is not the purchase price of the house, but the first year cost. If they're buying a newer house or a house like Russ's, which was recently renovated, that the purchase price plus the insurance and the taxes is pretty much it. Other houses where you're doing a gut renovation, the purchase price may be only two-thirds or even half sometimes of what you're actually looking at all in.
I have a question about the issue of storms taking trees down, and if it brings down your tree on my property. I understand I'm responsible for cleaning up whatever lands on my property. And I can't turn to you and say, hey, that was your tree, and you have to deal with this. I have to deal with
it. This is another area where I try to give good counsel to people because I've been around and I've seen all situations. Personally, my feeling is if my tree falls and lands on your property, this is my own personal experience,
right.
Not what the law says. The
right.
law, and it's not even a law. It's insurance companies
right.
that run this.
Well, there's a common law thing because I actually had to look this up when I was assistant general counsel at Aquarian. And so there's some case law as to whose responsibility it is if a tree falls on your property.
Mm. Well, there's a way to go about it. If you think the tree is dangerous, you can serve notice,
right.
legal papers to your neighbor and say, I'm really concerned. I like to keep people from going that far because I think that having a good neighbor is so important in your comfortability of living in your home. I live in a neighborhood where all our neighbors are very nice and close and
right.
cordial to each other, and that's ideal. But I've also seen where neighbors are very contentious, and it's a difficult way to live when, quite honestly, you know, Mark, when you have your neighbor next door that doesn't like you and you don't like them.
We had a situation like that in Old Greenwich where our neighbor was constantly trying to sneak things through, either not following the system, not going to the town, and some of it directly affected our property. And it just made it difficult to live next door to him because you never knew what he was going
to
do
right.
next.
So back to Bob's question. If it was me, I would come over to you and I'd say, you know, at the very least, can we split the cost? I feel responsible. Or even better, if I was in a financial position to do so, I would absorb the cost. Now, if it's an insurance claim, then we let the insurance companies handle it.
Of course.
I think that's prudent, you know, and that's the way to do it.
We actually had that exact situation with our neighbor up on Berrien Hill. We had a tree fall onto his property, and we volunteered to pay for it. And he was quite appreciative. He was he was actually from overseas. And then 2 years later, another storm from another direction caused one of his trees to fall on our property. And he called us up and said, you took care of your tree. I'll take care of my tree.
Well, that's good. That's good neighbors.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. And he was a great guy to live with. We had dinner with them occasionally and stuff like that.
But, you know, sometimes people, we get back to this, where there are still in this town many elderly people that are living in homes they've lived in for 30 and 40 years. And you have to take that into account. Sometimes you're in a better financial position than them. And as a good neighbor in that situation, I think, you know, you have to understand they can't pay for it.
Right.
They're not able to.
Yeah.
And then not to make them feel bad, you just take care of it.
So now, have there been trees – or have there been trends in tree management and landscaping in the 40 years you've been in, or pretty much everybody likes to keep the trees? And
I would say that it's remained fairly constant around here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have more education,
mm-hmm.
and I think people, we bring that to bear more.
Really quick, just because we're ending up the show, how would someone contact you if they were interested in getting a consultation or some work that was going to get done?
Well, I would say look at my ad in the paper, but I don't have any. my last name is agrotrees, and plural is my Gmail address, agrotrees@gmail.com, and I'm the easiest way to get me is through that email address.
Cool. Perfect. Thank you very much. This has been Greenwich Streets. We will be back next week at 10 a.m., and we appreciate you listening both here and on our podcast, which you can get at Greenwich Streets or at WGCH.com. Thank you.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County and